Welcome, everyone. I am so grateful to have Dan Kandel on my show today. Dan is a multi-award-winning board-certified hypnotist, author, and speaker. Dan has been doing hypnosis for over half his life, and now he travels the world with his hypnotic presentations and works with groups and individuals, teaching them how to release anxiety fast, and he helps them replace it with confidence and self-control. Dan is known around the world as the anxiety relief guy. He helps you positively rewire your subconscious mind to live a more high-performing life. And I am so excited because I first became aware of you, Dan, listening to a HypnoThoughts presentation that had been recorded. I was a brand new hypnotist and I'm dreaming really big and thinking of all the possibilities. And I heard you talk about your experience on stage, tell a little bit of your story. And awesome. The whole time you were speaking, I'm like getting more and more excited, and I'm thinking, this is amazing. How it's like the example that you set is so inspiring.
Well, thank you so much, and it's great to be on. And you're my coffee date. For those of you who are listening, not watching the video, I'm drinking coffee, so you're my coffee date today, Lori. So
I love that. Yeah, we're recording this at 7 in the morning my time, 9 in the morning your time, and you're in Connecticut. Yes,
I'm in Connecticut. Yeah, and I prefaced this before we started recording. I have like a studio that I record things in that's in my house, but today they're installing a brand new shower door. My dog was going nuts. They have drills and everything like that. So I came out to my backyard oasis. There's hummingbird feeders behind me, a fire pit. There's other bird feeders on that side of me. So for those of you who aren't watching this, if you're listening to this, just know that I'm in my backyard oasis. So I'm very zen and relaxed right now.
It is beautiful. I feel zen just looking at it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, my goal with this podcast is to kind of advocate for the listener. And so even as I was describing listening to your presentation for the first time, there was this part of me that felt so excited that you had set this example. And then at the same time, I'm telling myself this story as I listen. Oh, he's already done it so well. He has all this experience. I'm never going to do it as well as he does. And I think that's a really common experience when people see the success that others have had.
Right.
There's this pull toward realizing that if they can do it, you can do it. And then there's this opposing pull saying, they already did it. What's left for me? So can you just kind of talk to me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I find what happens is in classes, when people take hypnosis classes or any class, it's a different level and a different layer of self-doubt. And as someone who teaches hypnosis, you have to make sure that your students, they don't need to know that you can do it well. That's why they're there. They need to know that they can do it well. And that's why when I teach, sometimes I have to remind myself, okay, Dan, slow down. This is the first time these people are hearing this. So you don't have to go into Dan stage mode and rattle off 10 million things in a half an hour, because it's just going to go right in one ear and out the other. So sometimes I have to remind myself to like really slow down. And there was a moment where I was actually teaching a stage hypnosis class with Michael DeShalit in Las Vegas about a year ago. And Michael was teaching our students this new, in stage hypnosis, we call them suggestibility tests. I call them concentration exercises now. He was teaching people this one exercise that I had never seen before. And here I am, like, I'm like, okay, Mr. like hypnosis prodigy or whatever. And all our students are like, okay, Dan, now you do it. And I'm like, got this. And I go up, I start doing the exercise, and I totally failed. and I'm like, this is a really important moment, because you all see that I'm still learning. And I'm like, and it's still an exercise that I still have to practice before I do it, because it's so, there's like an offbeat moment to it. And the exercise I'm talking about, there's one where you have someone like push on your hand and you make like circles with your hand. And then there's a subconscious moment where you take your hand away and the other person's hand like levitates mm-hmm. like that. And just to get that, the timing with it and the wording. And Mike came over to me afterwards and he's like, what happened? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I went into learning mode again. It was actually this really cool moment. So I still know how people feel with that because it happens to me all the time. And I'll sit there and try and get the wording right with things when I'm taking classes, because I still love to take classes and learn. And I'm sitting there in class and it reminds me that's what the that's what our students are experiencing. There's another time recently where I was speaking at a hypnosis convention, and I had seen at this particular hypnosis conference, a lot of the presenters were kind of off to the side, and it was like very divided, like presenters and then attendees. And after my presentation, I went around to every single attendee and I shook their hand personally and thanked each and every one of them for attending my presentation. And there were about like 60 people, and it was lunchtime. And I was talking to the other presenters and I said, you know, we sometimes forget that we were where they are, because most of them were people who were new to the profession. I said, and we also sometimes forget that we still are where they are.
Yes. Yes.
So I said, we need to interact and commingle and just like put egos aside and realize that we're all still learning all the time.
I love that. Now, I mentioned in your intro that you've been doing hypnosis half your life. So I'm assuming you were in your teens when you started using hypnosis. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So when I was like 11, 12 years old, I was going through a lot of challenges in school. I had some learning difficulties. I had just was having some, you know, family issues, had a lot of addiction in my family that I was watching other people struggle with. My parents had gotten a divorce, and my parents were really smart, because they were very intelligent, because they removed me from that entire situation, and they had me essentially on every weekend and every school vacation, they had me go work on a farm. So I basically worked on a farm in upstate New York from the time where I was like, I think it was like 9 years old to the time where I was like 15. But between that, I was still struggling with things. I was struggling with anxiety. I was struggling with self-acceptance. I was questioning my sexuality, and there was just like a lot going on. So when I was about 12 years old, my dad brought me on a camping trip, and I had seen a stage hypnotist on this camping trip, and he hypnotized a bunch of people on stage, and seemingly they became his puppets. It was absolutely fascinating. And something amazing happened. I memorized every single thing that guy did in that show, just like that. Like, I didn't even have to think about it. It just like all got stuck in my head. So I went home and I practiced what he did. I practiced it on my friends, and it worked. Wow. So my parents found out I started to have this interest in hypnosis, and I was also, sorry, if you hear like power drills, they're installing my shower door right now.
It adds to the ambiance. It can just allow everyone to enjoy this conversation even more.
It's like birds tweeting in the background. It sounds like a jackhammer. I promise I don't have bad gas. That's really like, So in the interim of me going through some of these challenges, my parents, they bought me a book about hypnosis, and it was Hypnosis for Beginners by, I believe it was William Hewitt. And in that, it was mainly like a therapeutic book. There's a section in the book, How to Hypnotize Yourself to Get Better Grades. So I learned self-hypnosis when I was 13 years old, and I learned the typical progressive relaxation, and that's what I started using. And then I realized that there's these things called rapid inductions and instant inductions. So I learned those, and I started doing stage shows when I was 14 years old. I was trained in stage hypnosis when I was 14 by Jerry Valley, Tommy V, Orman McGill, and a few others. And it was just from there, I started performing all over the country. When I was a teenager, my parents had to drive me to my shows because I didn't have my license yet. I opened up a business called Hypnotic House Calls. So I would go to people's homes, and instead of doing a Tupperware party, I'd say you have to invite 10 of your friends. It's $50 a person, and I'll hypnotize everybody to either lose weight or reduce their stress.
Wow.
So that's what I did as a teenager. So I'd walk out of a person's house making $500 plus whatever I'd sell people that night. So $500 after doing like an hour or two hypnosis seminar for their friends for weight loss. Then I started doing repeats where I said, okay, now we're going to go from doing one session to four. So I would walk out of a person's house now making like $2,000 because I would have people pay for four sessions. And from there, it just started to grow and grow and grow. And then when I was in college, I started doing hypnosis out of my dorm room. And I would see five people a day who are students, all for like study improvement. I'd charge $10 a person. I'd make money that way. I'd still do stage shows. And now I have a very busy clinic. I have two other hypnotists and a therapist who works for me. And we have more than enough business to go around. So, and I still travel all over the world teaching and presenting, did a TED talk. The TED talk has gotten on different YouTube channels at over like 9 or 10 million views.
Oh, wow.
So it's always growing. It's expansive. And I'm so thankful for the opportunities that I receive and just for my clients, for friends that I have, such as yourself in the profession, a new friend in the profession. And I'm just so thankful for all this because I always tell people, if a 13-year-old with a learning disability can learn hypnosis, you can too.
I love that. I think there's something so, I've talked with several hypnotists. It seems like a lot of hypnotists kind of started in their teens. And I think there's a little part of me that envies that, because I think when you're that age, it's almost like you haven't learned self-doubt as strongly. And of course we have it in some areas. The teens can be the hardest years, but was there ever a time when you know, as you were learning and going into this, when you thought, oh no, what if this doesn't work, or when it didn't work besides that first time?
It was more other people would doubt it. And like my parents, they always told me, have a fallback plan. And my parents were my biggest supporters, but they always said, oh, have a fallback plan, still go to college, get your degree. And also being a teenager, Lori, a lot of people didn't want a teenager hypnotizing them. Mm-hmm. I will never forget. These people booked my hypnosis show. At the time, I think I charged them like I charged them like $750. I was 15 years old. And we had like everything set, the contract was signed. And then they came back and they said, we realize you're 15 and we don't want you performing. We don't think you'll be able to connect with, what was the group? The Shriners Foundation. And it was to raise money. So they said, we don't think you'll be able to connect to our audience. And I'm like, oh geez. So it's funny as they actually hired someone to do the show who was older than I was, but this person was doing hypnosis. He had done hypnosis for less than he actually was in like one of the same classes that I was in. And which was interesting. And still, Lori, still to this day, I still get messages from other hypnotists who say, I've been doing hypnosis for a lot longer than you have. I don't think you have anything to teach me. Like, and it's funny, they'll say, I've been doing hypnosis for like 7 years, which is clearly more than you've been doing hypnosis for. I'm like, oh, here we go. And I used to get really insecure about those. And those, I used to get really butthurt over that. And now, like, I just got one of these emails about 2 weeks ago from someone who is on my email list who signed up for something that I have. And this person said, you have nothing to teach me about anxiety. I've been doing hypnosis for 12 years. And honestly, I think you're completely wrong with everything that you say. And I said to this, I sent an email back to this person. I said, Instead of telling you all my degrees and qualifications and everything like that, I don't have to please you. And I said, I really don't have anything to prove to you because you're not my client. I said, enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for your opinion. And send. delete. So it's dealing with that where I have always put, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it right. And I want to become a specialist and I want to become an expert in something. And I don't really half-ass a lot of areas that I want to specialize in. So that's why, even when I was a teenager, there weren't many times where I said, oh, this isn't going to work out. I said, I'm going to try this.
I love that.
In most situations it's worked out. There's been some it hasn't, but in most situations it's worked out. So
I really love that. And good. I think anyone listening, if you're, you know, if there's a little voice in the back of your head saying, well, but Dan this, right. You can start to tell yourself, you can actually take on the characteristics that Dan utilized as a 14-year-old using this. And when you notice that voice in your head saying, what if, you can just say, I'm just going to try this. Like, come with the right place of playfulness and curiosity. Imagine that you're a 14-year-old doing this and you're going to, it's going to transform not only your results, but if you do fail, you know, if it doesn't go the way you expected it to, you'll be able to blow it off and move forward.
And you know what happened to Lori? There's two things that I realized it's interesting. I haven't really realized that much before we started talking. When I would go on stage, when I was like 13, 14, even 15 years old, I would play off as if I was a lot older. And fortunately I had a lower, like my low voice developed early. I had facial hair early. And so I would look a lot older. And people even come up to me now and they say, and I'm 33 at the time that we're filming this, and people come up to me now and they say, you must be what, like 44, 45? And the first thing I ask is, what makes you think that? And they say, well, you have this look and this feel about you, that you're older and more mature. And that's because I had to grow up really quickly. I had to grow up really fast because some things that were going on in my family and everything. But I tell people, I'm like, people would even think this when I was like 28, 29. It's like, no, I'm like 30 years old. And people wouldn't believe me. And they would say, well, my 30-year-old is still like sleeping on my couch in my basement. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that. I just took a different path. But I realized though, Lori, what I used to do when I would go on stage, I would embody other people who were my mentors. Hmm. And I remember Jerry Valley he would wear like a tuxedo when he would do his shows. So I bought a tuxedo and I started wearing a tuxedo. And he would have us watch videos of him. And the one thing that I do like almost like impressions of other hypnotists because when I was younger, I would watch all their videos. And so I kind of embodied them. And there was a video that I saw of Jerry when I was like probably 15 years old. And in the middle of his show, he must have had something on his forehead or something like that. In the middle of his show, he just did this and like walked off. So this is the dumbest thing, but for literally 100 shows, what did I do? Just because I saw Jerry do it, I just stopped dead in the middle of my show and continued on. And I'm like, how stupid was that? But at the same time, I'm like, that was an anchor of some, yes. Now that I understand now, it was an anchor of some sorts to help me feel more confident and comfortable up there. And saying, hey, if this worked for Jerry Valley, and for those who are listening to this, he literally just like slapped himself in the forehead because like a bug landed on his forehead, just slapped himself in the forehead. And And I remember the exact show he did this. It was for a New Year's Eve show that he did in this auditorium and this like gymnasium that he did with a bunch of people. And he started this show off. Wasn't this dinner fantastic? Like, so I would talk like him. I would watch videos of Don Martin and I would talk like Don Martin. I would do shows like Don, or I would do sessions like Don Martin. Cause there was one time I was doing like 10 clients a day. And I'd launch into Don Martin mode. And there is no person, male, female, family, friend, coworker, neighbor, associate, or stranger. And I would just like launch into full-blown Don Martin personality to now when we're at conventions together, we have Don offs. and we we'll have these fun impersonation moments. So so it's about having fun. When I go on stage and I still do this, like I know you had Melissa Tears on recently on your podcast. There are times where I embody Melissa Tears, mm-hmm. which is really interesting. And I'm like, I'm going to do a session like Melissa, or like I would think Melissa Tears would do a session.
Yeah.
So that's a fun little strategy that I use to overcome some of the self-doubt that I sometimes still get, is to embody other people who would like crush this and who would go into a room like fearless. So it's kind of a little strategy that I use.
I love that strategy. And it's one I've used myself. And when I've presented stuff like this to people, sometimes they'll say, well, I don't want to fake it. And I don't think it's really an idea of faking it till you make it or even pretending. When you model someone else and you essentially, you're utilizing those aspects of your own personality. If you can fake it, that means that it's an aspect of your personality that might just be undercultivated.
Absolutely.
So we've learned everything we've done in life by modeling. You know, we might have seen our parents feeling insecure and self-conscious. And so when we're doing mm-hmm. that ourselves now, you know, if there's that voice in the back of your head saying, well, I can't do this because someone has modeled that behavior for you. And by you right. simply stepping into some behaviors and, you know, model Dan, model a person that you admire and just be that person as you present, you're going to unlock those attributes and they'll become more and more natural until you realize that you've had this identity level shift that lets you just show up that way automatically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where it's almost like associating versus dissociating, excuse me. And one of the times where I still have to do this and use dissociation is when I watch the videos that I post on YouTube or Facebook or and read the comments on those videos. Because when people get behind a keyboard, they can be savage. Like they can be just so vicious sometimes and mean. And I was reading some of the comments that were on my TED Talk and I'm like, wow, they're picking out everything I did wrong. And there was even, there's a hypnotist who's now passed on. And he was actually one of my mentors. I don't want to say his name, but he was someone that I really greatly looked up to. And I don't think he realized I had looked up to him. And when I first did my TED Talk, he shared it on his Facebook page. And there's a lot of hypnotists that followed him. And he said, a great use of semantics, but can anyone pick out what he did wrong? And Lori, I was on this high of like, oh my gosh, I did a TED Talk. This is awesome. I was on this high and I saw him post that and listen to the words he used. Can you pick out what he did wrong? So all of a sudden, now there's all these hypnotists jumping on, picking out every little nuance that could, that I did. And I'm sitting here and, I remember this. Jason Lynette was, he backed me and he's a good friend. He stood up for me and he, in the Jason Lynette way, he added levity into the situation and he sent me a message. He's like, did you see this post? I'm like, yeah, I did. Thank you so much for standing up for me. But I didn't yet feel comfortable to really stand up for myself in that. And had I done that differently, I would have privately messaged that person and said, you know, I really respected you. And you totally could have done that in much more of a supportive way.
Yeah.
So now I dissociate from that. And I look at it as some of those videos, I'm like, it's not me. And I have to look at it from a different perspective of like, that's a different person. And in some ways it is, because I know a lot different now than I knew 4 years ago when I gave that TED talk. And I knew I wouldn't have worn a blue suit with a red tie, because I looked exactly like Donald Trump. Like, and those are some of the comments there. No, who's he trying to be, Donald Trump? I'm like, no. So anyway, it's these fun little moments where you have to look back. You have to kind of pull back and you have to look at it and almost laugh and be like, that's actually kind of funny what that person is saying, and look at it a little bit differently. So that's another technique that I use is dissociation, because there are still some times where I'm like, oh gosh, if I read into this too much, it's going to get to me. So,
yeah. Yeah. Can you maybe articulate a little bit more how you actually go through that process? Because I think for people listening, it's so scary. And even a couple of years before I decided to really put myself out there, I had this, like, my personality type is such a pleaser personality type.
Yes,
and I'm so offended when people don't like me and don't like what I do.
Yep.
And so I kind of had to ask myself before I ever decided I was going to start going more public, what am I going to do when people criticize me? And I've noticed the more people are exposed to my work, the more people don't like me. And so if you could talk a little bit more about that strategy of what helps you to dissociate when you know, cause like you get that punch in the gut feeling.
Oh yeah.
How do you move forward?
And I'm right there with you, Lori, of getting that like punch in the gut. Mine is more like I get this tinny feeling in my mouth and I just get like the cold sweats almost. So the way I deal with that is I have some of my best friends are very humbling and they're also very sarcastic. And they bring me back to, like, so they'll sometimes like screenshot a comment that somebody says and they'll send it to me and they'll be like, ain't this the truth? And it will be like such a nasty comment. My friends just, they know it's gonna poke fun. So one of the things that I do is first and foremost, I will not look at the comments on those videos if I'm in like a bad mood or if I'm upset. And that's like rule number one. Rule number two for me is I go back and I just ask myself, is okay, what would I have done differently? And just know that literally, just like I said, I'm not that person anymore. I'm not that person. And would I have changed my entire message to accommodate the five people that I pissed off instead of changing 5 million people's lives that were not pissed off? And no, I would not, because mm-hmm. I don't want to compromise who I am to appease five people that might not like me one day just because they decide they don't like me. And here's what I've really learned. People who are, and I hope I can say this, people who are assholes to you, to people like you and people like me, are broken inside. They are absolutely broken inside. So anytime I get a hate comment, or anytime I get like a negative Nancy, or what do they call it now? Complainer Karen, right? Anytime I get like an email from a Karen, and my partner's mom's name is Karen. And I was just telling her this last night, cause we saw her last night, and I'm like, yeah, I get emails all the time from Karens. And she's like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, no, it was a meme. It was a meme. I'm like, like, it has nothing to do with you. It's just a meme. So one of the things I do is I kind of put myself in their shoes. I have to remind myself that these people who are not just criticizing me, but they're not doing it in any productive, positive way, to remind myself, number one, they're broken inside. Number two, they have nothing better to do than to sit here and criticize you, especially in like a public forum. Because if you had, and I used to do this, people who used to criticize me negatively or say something really, really nasty to me, I used to track, in a way, like track them. And I used to do more research about them. And I would realize they're not just treating me that way. They're treating everybody in their lives like that.
Yes. Yes.
My business coach also told me, she's like, Dan, I just want you, because I never wanted to be known by other hypnotists. I wanted to do my own little thing and stay in my box. And I never wanted to be known by other hypnotists. And then the more I put out there, just like you, the more we put out there, the more we become known, and the more we do open ourselves up to positive feedback, to people loving our message, to changing more people's lives, to influencing more people, we also open ourselves up to that other thing, which is people not agreeing with us. Mm-hmm. So when I started to get that, that disagreeing, I wasn't prepared for it. And I just thought, oh, I'm going to put this out there and everyone's going to love it. And when I realized that not everybody loves it, it's only a small percentage of the people, but sometimes that small percentage we remember. My business coach told me one time, she said, it's lonely at the top. And she said, the more you put out there, the more people are going to disagree with you. And you have to be ready for that. But you also have to laugh at that, because most likely someone who has achieved more or greater than you have will not be the ones criticizing you.
Yes.
Right.
Dan, have you seen Brené Brown's TED Talk about the man in the arena?
Yes.
I love that. I'll link to it below the show, but the premise is that whenever someone is criticizing you, it's what you're saying. It's most often someone who's not brave enough to put themselves out there and do what you're doing. Right. And it's, when you think about it, it's the person who's actually in the arena with you, whose opinion matters, the person who's been doing what you're doing and understands what it's like to, I mean, it's scary to put yourself out there. And it's, for me, when I first started putting myself out there, I was like you, I wasn't trying to be public in front of hypnotists either. And I half expected everyone to think I was an idiot. So when I actually started getting some positive feedback, it was a little bit of a boost. And then, you know, especially recently, I've had people putting really controversial things up on my Facebook page. And I think of my Facebook page as like my living room. And I want to cultivate it as this really yes. beautiful space. And I want people to feel good when they're there and just like let me love on them. And so I put this little happy meme up that was really, it was a quote that I had heard in a TED Talk. And people just were lambasting me, saying, yes. Oh, I completely disagree. And I'm thinking, this is my living room. Take yeah. your muddy boots off my coffee table.
Yes. But, yep.
Yeah.
I actually saw your post about something that you said, where like, I look at my Facebook, like my living room, like, I love that. And I totally admire that. And I feel the same way. And mm-hmm. people have, in a way, and I don't know if they have with you as well, but people have said to me, as someone who owns a business and as someone who is somewhat of an influencer, you should use your influence as like a public forum with everything that's going on. And this is in the midst of just everything political that could possibly be happening is happening. And here's my perspective on this. If I put something out there that separates and divides my audience, mm-hmm. and let's say it separates 20%, it divides 20% of people from me, 20% of, so all of those people will remember 6 months from now that I said or did something that was to upset them. And I didn't get in business to upset people. I didn't get in business to agree with people. I got in business to do my own thing and to help as many people as possible. If I say nothing publicly in my business, and I have conversations behind closed doors, because people don't know the conversations we're having behind closed doors, if I say nothing but positive things and put out things that can help people, 100% of no one will come up to me and say, 6 months ago, you didn't say anything and I'm offended, you know? So, <Yes. laughs> and I was talking to somebody, someone that I had actually hired, to do some work in my yard. And he said, I posted on my business page about my views on this, this, and this. He said, and I lost 20 customers. And I'm like, what can I say? What can I say? And I have views about it. I don't want to get political. I don't want to talk about those views. I have views about everything, but I don't publicly put them out there because So anyway, upward and onward, you know? But it is that where like Facebook and social media, I'm right there with you. I want it to be when people come on my page, I want people to smile. I want people to feel moved. I want people to like watch the videos I post and just look at the things that I post and the things I put out there and offer. And when I listened to the podcast that you did with Jason Lynette, I said, oh my God, finally, someone who has very similar views and approaches in the way that I do. Because you had said something really cool. You're like, I don't really focus that much on like hypnosis as like an induction or things like that. It's just all like process. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And a woman, Kim Turgeon, who works for me and who I'm pushing her. I'm like, Kim, you gotta go on podcasts. And because
yes.
she has blown it up in like, in a matter of a year. She's been doing this, Lori, for less than a year, and she has blown it up. Wow. She is getting results with, especially like with kids and specifically. So I trained her because she had sent me literally like $25,000 or $30,000 in referrals.
Wow.
And because I helped her daughter, and her daughter had a condition called PANDAS. And Kim she's a PANDAS advocate, and not like the soft cuddly kind, but for those who don't know, PANS and PANDAS, it's a medical condition where when children get strep or tonsillitis, it causes like swelling in the brain, and it causes severe behavioral changes, emotional issues, and like your kids change overnight. And many times parents don't know what to do. They don't know how to adapt their parenting styles to accommodate these changes. And people will look at them. They'll look at the parents sometimes and say, wow, that person doesn't know how to parent their kid. And that's 100% wrong. It is a condition that literally changes your kid, in many cases. Mm. And it's a relatively like new diagnosis. So anyway, so Kim had, come to me with her daughter, and we had amazing results. And then she put me on this like radio show, and I started getting referrals left and right. And she started saying, then she hooked me up with this doctor. And so I met with Kim for a glass of wine one night, and I said, what do you want? And I said, I can't give you money. I said, I can't give you money for like sending me people. I said, but what can I do for you? I'm like, I can see your entire family for free. What can I do for you? She said, I want to do what you do.
Mm.
And I don't mentor people. And I thought, what's a way that I can really change Kim's life? And so I said, I don't mentor people privately. Now I take on a few people. But I said, I really don't. So what I did, I took him under my wing. I mentored her. She's also a school teacher. And she, right out of the gate, she just started working with people and getting amazing results. And the way she does hypnosis, she'll like get down on, and I've seen this for myself. And Lori, I see her like, cause she'll use my office when I'm not in my office. So we'll sometimes like compete. And I've seen her go in with a child who hates everybody and everything. And within 30 seconds, she wins over this kid. She'll bring a blanket and she'll get down on the floor and she'll say, "Hi, I'm Miss Kim." And I just, I'm now learning from her. And, wow. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is such a different way of working with people. And she took what I taught her and she ran with it and she developed her own styles. And she said, "I just thought this is what hypnotists were doing," because she integrates her teaching modalities with it. I'm like, no, I'm like, people aren't doing this. So I'm pushing her to like get on more podcasts and stuff like that as well. But she had said to me, she's like, "Oh my gosh," she's like, "I listened to Lori's podcast," and she said, "You and Lori have very similar styles of working with people." And then I listened to your podcast, to the podcast you did with Jason. I listened to your podcast and I'm like, oh my gosh, we really do have very similar perspectives. And I even reached out to you, I think. And I think, Lori, I think you are a fabulous leader in our profession. And I really do. And I think more people can and need to and should learn from you and people like you. Because there's one thing that I see when I go on your Facebook page, when I listen to your stuff, I hear two amazing things that don't come naturally to a lot of people, and that is kindness and compassion. Hmm. And to approach your work with a level of kindness and compassion and also put love in there as well, that's what I think really, I have noticed for me, really helps change people's lives. Is one thing people have, you know, I built my business on being honest and being caring and being understanding. And that's, it's not something that you can really teach. It's, I think it's just something that comes naturally. And I had to actually learn to, a few things happened in my life where I actually had to relearn how to be caring and compassionate and kind to my clients, because I, for a little while, started to kind of go rogue. And it was Ken Guzzo who actually reminded me to look at my clients with an authentic connection and an authentic intention. And now whenever I sit with a client, I have like my grandfather, who's like my guardian angel. He had just passed away a couple of months ago, and he is like my hypno guardian angel. And I look at every one of my clients now like I would look at my grandfather. It changes the way that we do work with people. Thank you for being that for our profession, because I think especially right now our profession needs that.
Thank you. That means so much. And I think in the long run, people don't remember what you do. They don't remember all your accolades, but they remember how you make them feel. And right. I think if a person feels loved and seen and heard in your presence, that can be as transformative as anything else that we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we have to remind ourselves too sometimes the trials and tribulations we've gone through, because I do believe sometimes we do need to bring ourselves back down to earth. And yeah. And there's the past like 4 years, I think it's when you get to be like in your early to mid 30s, you have to start dealing with a lot of loss and a lot of tragedy, and also confronting like a lot of different health things and stuff. And it was about a year ago that the doctors called me. They thought I had leukemia, and I honestly didn't know if I would still be here. So that's one of the reasons why I started hiring other people. And that's why I hired, you know, one of the reasons why I trained and hired Kim and another therapist, Liz, who is also a licensed mental health counselor, and trained her in hypnosis to take over some of my practice. And I'm just so thankful for the community of people that surround me and support me.
Well, if this would be an appropriate time to segue in, I would love to talk. You had mentioned that you recently dissolved a membership, and I wondered if you would talk to us a little bit about that in the context of us silencing our own imposter monsters and what that story is behind the scenes.
You are the first person that I'm talking to about this, like, publicly. So, okay. About 2, maybe 3 years ago, I wrote my first book, and it was The Hypnotic Connection. And community has always been such an important word for me. And I realized I was always chasing other people's communities and trying to be a part of everybody else's community. And finally, I realized, you know what, Dan, make your own damn community. Like, just make your own community. And you have all these people that follow you. Make your own community. So what I did, I wrote a book. And by the way, I accidentally, the first version of the book, had 1,000 copies of the unedited version published. So for those of you people who bought the first 1,000 copies of my book, oh my God, people came back talking about, like, imposter monster. People came back to me circling all the mistakes that I made in my book. And I'm like, and I'm like, I paid an editor and I hired professionals to do this. And I'm like, you idiot. You published the wrong version of the damn book. So for those people who have the first 1,000 copies of my book, you have a prized edition.
Yes.
Because if you don't think I fixed that. So I went and I actually turned it into, like, a little contest. And like, send me your errors. And so I had a bunch of people, like, sending me all these errors and stuff like that. So I went back and I fixed everything. And I actually lengthened the book. So part of that, I wanted the book to be an entryway into my funnel. So then I developed a membership community called the Make Success Happen Inner Circle. And I had like cake work. I had 25% of the people who bought my book signed up for my community. And it was like $27 a month. And the deal was I was going to upload a coaching video, a workbook, and some type of mental conditioning audio every month. So they're going to be like three things. And that worked. And then my funnel stopped working and just my funnel broke. So then I tried all these different ways to sell the membership. And there were a few things missing in the membership. So then I hired a marketer, a person to do marketing for me. And I paid him a lot of money. And we said, okay, let's do, like, instead of $27, let's do a dollar trial membership. And then it goes to like $97. And then COVID happened. And he said, you know what, let's go from, we decide people can't afford $97 a month right now, or they're not going to want to spend it right now. So let's do a dollar trial, week trial to $67 a month. And he said, you'll add a live component. So every other week you'll do a live group call. I was getting a lot of people who would say, I want the dollar trial. And then after it hit 60, or before it would hit $67, they would say, okay, I don't want to pay for this. And they'd ask for a refund, or they'd ask me to stop their payment. And that was about like 70% of the people. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel awful. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I have 70% of the people who are backing out of this. And I'm like, is the content not good enough? Is and this was just like a couple months ago. And I started asking, like, what's wrong with me? Why don't people want to stick in this? Like, I honestly think $67 a month and you get your basically a hypnotist to be there with you like 24/7. I'm like, that sounds stellar. I charge $500-$750 per session when I'm working with people. And so I'm like, to get me for 60, not to toot my own horn, but essentially to get in a program like this for $67 a month is a cakewalk. And should be a simple decision. So I started wondering, like, is it the content? Is it not resonating with people? Are the people not liking me in the videos? Do people not like my audios? So I started to be filled with all this self-doubt, and I started saying to myself, this isn't going the way I wanted it to go. I would do the group sessions, and online, and I wanted it to be like a participation thing, and it would be like pulling teeth to get people to participate. So then it was interesting because then I saw you were doing group sessions, and it was real, the synchronicity here was really interesting because I had a content calendar of group sessions, and you, I don't know how you did this. You were following my content calendar and you're like, I'm doing one this week on motivation. I'm like, shit, I'm doing one this week on motivation there. I'm doing one this week on imposter syndrome. I'm like, shit, I'm doing one this week on. So you and I were following like the same content calendar. So then I saw you were doing it. And then that felt like that made me wonder, like, it seems like she's getting like all these people attending hers, and I'm getting like 5 or 6 people showing up for my group sessions, and she's getting like 50. I'm like, what the hell? So then I saw what you were doing, and I'm like, there's something I'm not doing right. So what I did, I dissolved the membership, and I told everybody, I'm like, the people who are in it, you still get access to everything, and what you'll get is any group session I do, you get in it for free. And like people are fine with that. I create like a Facebook community and everything like that. And it wasn't working out. So I dissolved it. And I dissolved it, I think, because of my own self-doubt. I'm like, what aren't people liking? So then we did the research. And after I had, I don't want to say, dissolve is a nasty word. I shouldn't say dissolve. I put it on the back burner and canceled everybody's payments. So nobody was paying me anything anymore. And at the time that I canceled, I had about 30 active people in it who were paying monthly. So after we did all the research and the analytics and surveys and stuff like that, we found out that the reason why people were dropping out was because the majority of people joining were therapists and hypnotists who wanted to see what I was doing. And then they got a small taste of it and then wanted to leave because they didn't want to pay $67 a month.
Interesting.
And that was about 80% of the people that yeah. So that was that. And I'm thinking about it now, and I'm like, okay, do I reconvene? So I've just changed directions so many times throughout the whole pandemic. And that was one of the ways I changed directions. But the reason why I like morphed it was because I was like, I don't think people are liking this. Like it must be something about me. And it really had nothing to do.
Right.
So that's where the imposter monster won. It won that battle, but it's not going to win the war.
I love that. And you learned from it. To me, that's right. The takeaway is you learned from it. You're still, you know, you didn't close the doors and stop, you know, you're still moving forward. Right. The first podcast I did with Jason Lynette, I've shared this before, but I got finished with the podcast. I pushed end after he hung up, and I immediately started thinking, why did I say that? Why did I say that? And that night I went out and I was listening to live music and I didn't hear anything because I was thinking, I need to close down my website. I need to just hide. You know, I'm going to be the laughingstock of the hypnosis community. We tell ourselves these stories and we make this meaning out of things that don't have to mean, you know, what if it actually meant something really awesome? So Thank you so much for sharing that here. I'm absolutely so grateful, Dan.
And you are the first one that I shared that publicly with. So,
well, I appreciate it. Me and my this podcast is going to go viral, and millions of people will hear it.
Oh joy!
Well, they'll know who their go-to anxiety person is.
Right.
Will you talk to me a little bit about when you decided to launch your anxiety products on a wider scale?
Yes. So this is where, like I said, I was originally. Working with people who had anxiety gave me anxiety because I was like, oh my gosh, like, I hope this works. And what happens if people are still anxious? And what I realized was I can't take away everybody's everything anxiety. It's just, you should have some anxiety about some things. And then I took a course from Melissa Tears And I really do feel like she changed the way I do hypnosis. And I tell her this too when I see her. And I'm like, I really do feel like you changed the way I do hypnosis. And then I started learning about, started finding out who she learned from and started learning from those people. And that's where I started taking what Melissa Tears taught me and changed a lot of it to work for me and added a lot of my own stuff to it. And where it's something I call the accelerated change protocol. And it's just this whole way of working with people that it really does help people very, very quickly, where it like clears a problem from the person's mind. And so I hired a marketing team and I started calling myself the anxiety guy, but there's already someone who's the anxiety guy out there who has millions of followers. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't call myself that. So someone said to me, they're like, there's a word missing there. So I'm like, what is the word? So they said, what do you do? I say, I help people release anxiety. I give people relief from anxiety. And we're like, that's it, the anxiety relief guy. And someone even said, that makes so much more sense, because if someone calls themselves the anxiety person, it sounds like they're going to give them anxiety. And you're the anxiety relief guy, so you take it away. So I started to record more videos and go more public with this. And that, again, that's where I start to get a lot of messages from therapists and from some other professionals in our profession that say, basically, like, what do you know about this? Like, why should people seek you out? And it was almost like a lot of other professionals who are doubting me. And then some of the clients that I would get too, some clients would say, like, I've had this for so long, there's no way that you can resolve my anxiety in just a matter of like 3 or 4 hours. And so I'd hear a lot of that, but what keeps me going is my own belief in my own process and in my abilities to help people out, because I've seen so many people make these amazing life transformations that there's too many people who have made them for me to doubt this process.
Right.
So that's where going on a larger scale with this, creating a podcast, it's really been this whole brand. And I've created this whole brand around being the anxiety relief guy. And it's morphed many times. We're in the middle of a morph right now where we're targeting entrepreneurs and business professionals, but we're also targeting teens and their parents. Mm-hmm. The messaging has to be completely different. So it is this discovery process I'm constantly going through myself. And then I had to ask myself, what's my story with anxiety? And, about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years, I think it was about 4 years now, where something traumatic happened to me on stage and I almost gave up. I almost quit hypnosis. I almost gave everything up. And like got a job at Walmart or something. And what happened was, I was doing a comedy hypnosis show, and there was a Catholic high school that I was performing at, that I had performed at several times before. And there's just a change in administration, and some kids had found out about my personal life and my sexuality, and I don't ever try and hide it. It just, like, who cares? What does it matter? So what? And I walked on stage, and a group of kids had got together and started screaming, "Get off the stage, you effing fag, you queer, you homo." And people just like continuing to shout that throughout the show. And then I used to do an intermission in my shows. So during intermission, I would I would send the students out into the audience and have them do some sort of skit in the audience. Like every time they try and say their name, their tongue falls out or something like that. It's just something like ongoing that would keep them in a hypnotic state, but still allow them to go get a drink of water, go get snack, support like the booster club, whatever it was. So after intermission, the leader of the ringleader of the circus that was starting all this stuff in the audience, he came up after intermission. Now, when you're doing a stage show, Lori, there's like 20, 25 people on stage. It's sometimes impossible to keep track of everybody. And so I didn't realize that this kid had come up, not knowing he came up to cause a problem. So I put everybody back into hypnosis I said, okay, everybody sit down, and had everybody sit back on stage. And this girl went over to that kid who came up, and she ripped the chair out from underneath him and pushed him off the chair. And I said, what'd you do that for? I'm like, I don't promote violence on my stand. Like, what'd you do that for? And she said, this is a high school girl. She said, he doesn't deserve to have a chair. He's a jerk. He's the one that was screaming mean things about you in the audience. Oh, so in a fit of rage, this kid, Lori, he ran back to one side of the stage, clotheslined this girl. They slid under the curtain, and she claims that he punched her in the face. So that's a lot of stuff to happen and process in the matter of like an hour and a half hypnosis show. So I ended the show. I'm like, I'm done. And I will never be back here. I'm done. Yeah. And I had a couple of choice words for the students. And I ran off stage. I'm like, bye. I got in my car. I cried. I called a couple of my friends. I didn't know what to do or how to respond to this. This never happened to me before. And I didn't know how to deal with it. So I had another show the very next night, and I'm like, you got this. Just, you know, that was an isolated incident. You got this. They introduced me. I tried to walk on stage, and it was like I hit a wall. I literally, like, I was about to walk on stage, and it was just a boom. And I got nauseous. I started dry heaving. I couldn't speak. I didn't know what to say. I just freaking forgot my entire show. It was like someone took an eraser and like squeegeed that clean. Like, my mind was clear, but not in a good way. And so I did a little bit of an anxiety relief technique that I was teaching my clients, because I wasn't the anxiety relief guy at this time. This helps me earn my street cred.
No kidding.
So long story short, I went and did the show. I think it was an awful show, but other people say, like, you know, show is fine, whatever. It was a battle to get through that show. Then I had to fly to Vegas to give a couple of corporate presentations, to some corporate groups that I work for. And one of my students was actually, and this wasn't a hypnosis conference, this was at like an actual thing that I got hired to do that had nothing to do with hypnosis. And I was the keynote speaker. One of my students, former students, so happened to be there. And he noticed that 15 minutes before my speech, I was backstage bawling my eyes out, freaking out, like saying like, where's the bourbon? Like looking just for some way to clear my nerves. And before he took my hypnosis course, he was a master at NLP. Hmm. This is how I got the gig, because he had taken my hypnosis course. He was already an NLP master, and he knew the people at this corporation and was friends. So he had them hire me. So he comes over, he's like, what is going on with you? He's like, you are a mess. And I said, I can't do this. I said, you know what? I'm done. I'm never going to do this again. I said, I'm calling the airport right now. I'm going to book a plane ticket home. Bye. And as I'm about to leave, he goes, get over here. And in 30 seconds, a matter of 30 seconds, I don't like using the word cure, but in a matter of 30 seconds, he cured my anxiety using this NLP like cluster of words that just can't. And I'm like, and it was like, I felt great for a while. And then I just wanted to make sure I continued to feel great. So I went to another hypnotist that I really trust, and she had worked with me for like one session. And with the combination at 30 seconds and then like another hour and a half session, just totally cleared it.
Amazing.
And I'm like, holy shit, I now know what I want to do with people. Like, yes. And that kind of, that ignited my brand. About 5 months ago, I got an email from anonymousapologies@gmail.com. And this is going to, I hope this is going to make me cry. I'll try. And so first and foremost, every time for 2 years, Lori, every time I talked about that, I couldn't talk about it without crying, because it just brought back a lot of stuff. I got an email a few months ago from anonymousapologies@gmail.com. And it was basically, Dan, I just want to apologize. I said some really mean things to you at a show that you did and caused a lot of problems for you. And I was just trying to show off to my friends and my buddies and blah, blah, blah. So he said, I shouldn't have done that. I realize it's not right to make fun of people for something that they cannot change. And please accept my sincerest apology. Sincerely, anonymous apology. By the way, we think it's a great show. We still laugh about everything that happened.
Oh my gosh. To
this day. And Lori, I'm just like I was sitting on the couch with my boyfriend. I just started like bawling my eyes out, and he's like, what's wrong? I'm like, you're never going to believe this. And I like to think it's the kid from that show. I don't know. Because then I was like, what have other people said about me that I maybe didn't hear? You know, but I like to think it was from that kid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what a powerful moment. What a powerful moment that was. And not just for me, but I'm like, but for him. And then a couple of pieces started to click together in my head, and I'm looking at like anonymousapologies@gmail.com. What are the letters of like the AA, right? And I'm like, this is really interesting, because this person would be probably about 20 years old, 21 years old by this time. And I'm like, maybe he was going through some things. And maybe Anonymous Apologies is the email extension that AA uses for one of their staff. So anyway, that I know I went off on a couple of tangents there, but that was like my starting point of being the anxiety relief guy. And some people say, you know, we're so sorry that happened to you. And the first thing I tell them is, I'm not. Because if that didn't happen, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. And I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today and helping people with all different forms of anxiety. So yeah, that's my story.
I am so grateful for you sharing that. As you were speaking, my heart just went out to you. And I know so many people listening will have the same experience where, you know, you took us on this spectrum of emotions to this sounds like the worst thing that could happen. Like imagining being on stage in front of an audience full of people and just experiencing that humility and then wanting to just throw in the towel and say, I give up. And when you think now to that email you got 5 months ago and, you know, that kind of culminating that experience.
It closed the loop.
Yes. And I want anyone listening to realize you are braver than you think. You are more resilient than you think. This thing that's hard that's happening to you, or this thing you're afraid might happen to you, it's going to make you stronger. And Dan, if you think about the people that have come to you and said, thank you for changing my life, Kim and others, it makes it all worth it, doesn't it?
It really does, and it's opened up so many powerful connections. And to get back on the Kim tangent for a second, Kim introduced me to her brother, who is a personal trainer, and he's like a celebrity personal trainer, and he's been on TV and in movies and stuff. And I started working with him, and after I started working with him, I went back to the oncologist, and the oncologist said, whatever you've been doing, keep doing it, because your levels went down, you're no longer risk for leukemia. And he totally changed my life. And Kim says, you changed the life of my family and my daughter. And she's like, I just hope I can repay you. And you have. So it comes full circle. And it really is a testament to, we all have the ability to change people's lives. And if that imposter monster sometimes gets the best of us, remember, sometimes it may win the battle, but it doesn't have to win the war.
Yes. I love that so much. My heart is so full. Thank you so much for letting us go on this journey with you.
Absolutely.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners? Any nugget of wisdom you'd like to leave with us?
I end every podcast, every interview, every video with these words. And it's because I really mean it. And I really, truly do believe that when you do these three things, you can be on the top of your game in every aspect of life. And that is, be well, do good, and be true to who you are.
I hope you loved that episode and have come away feeling inspired and ready to take action in your own life. Please remember that you are resilient. And I believe if Dan can do it, you can do it. And look forward to next week, because Kim Turgeon, who Dan was talking about on this episode, is going to be our guest next week. And I think you will absolutely love the inspiration she offers as well. Have a great day.